Good morning, everyone. John Huckenberry here. As Femi Okay has been reporting all morning long, there will be memorials for today's events. 8 years ago today, the attacks of September 11th here in New York, the Pentagon, and of course, the crash of Flight 93, which was one of the hijacked airplanes. And in many ways, while the World Trade Center site was smoldering in the United States, places around the world lit up as America thought of how to respond to the 9/11 attacks.
Americans should not expect one battle, but a lengthy campaign, unlike any other we have ever seen.
That's President George W. Bush addressing Congress September 20th, 2001, just literally a week or so after September 11th. And of course, places did light up all over the world. Here to share some remembrances of the international implications of what happened on 9/11 is Charlie Sennett, our friend, executive editor and founder of Global Post, a new online international news organization, which has done an enormous amount of coverage of Afghanistan most recently. Mm-hmm. And, you know, 8 years after September 11th, Afghanistan is probably a pretty good place to look at the aftermath of those attacks.
Yeah, you know, I remember arriving in Afghanistan on about September 19th, 2001, and it was like walking on the moon. This is a country that had been so ravaged by so much war. And when you got there and you saw the devastation of the place, what a failed state it was, and you felt like we are going to be here for a long time.
You felt that then?
You could tell that this country is not coming around anytime soon. And, you know, 8 years later, there are things that have been achieved in Afghanistan that are remarkable and that are worth pointing out. That said, militarily, it is really shaping up as a doomed intervention.
Yet, as I think back and look back, and we actually went through some of the archives here to listen to some of the coverage. I mean, when the Taliban was rolled back in Afghanistan, when Karzai was inaugurated, there was all this sort of heroic, well, look what we did in response to 9/11. Yet al-Zawahiri, Osama bin Laden's number two,
yep,
is still at large. Osama bin Laden is still at large. Al-Qaeda is still believed to have some sort of leadership holding up on the border of Afghanistan and Pakistan. It's worth noting how little has been accomplished, even though so much has been accomplished.
I mean, there were fateful mistakes that were made right in Tora Bora in December when the U.S. failed to commit sufficient ground troops to stop the retreat of the Taliban and al-Qaeda elements that went into Pakistan. The United States was then distracted, I think, by the war in Iraq for so many years that the Taliban and al-Qaeda were able to survive and regroup. And I think they really splintered, they fractured, and they became something very different. And I think right now the struggle across these two borders, Afghanistan and Pakistan, is a very difficult one. It's going to be very hard to get this done. It is not a monolithic Taliban. It is a fractured al-Qaeda. And it involves a country in which we can't really get in there. I mean, they're not going to be able to penetrate Pakistan, and nor should they, because it would expand the war terribly. So where this thing goes is very difficult to say, but this call by McChrystal, by General McChrystal,
Stanley McChrystal, the commander,
for more troops is increasingly not popular, as we see today coming out from the Democrats, and I think perilous.
Well, let's listen to what the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, said precisely on that subject yesterday.
I don't think there's a great deal of support for sending more troops to Afghanistan in the country or in the Congress.
Now, that either says that America got 9/11 really, really wrong by going into Afghanistan. But I'm wondering if there's an inevitability here. Mm. There had to be a response. There hasn't been an attack. Basically, this is the price we pay for no more attacks.
Well, I think there's a question, though, is have we reached that price? You know, for a long time, I am completely in agreement with you that we needed to respond to the attack on our country.
There needed to be a response of some sort.
Well, I think that the idea that the Taliban had this sort of leveraged buyout by al-Qaeda, by bin Laden, was so perilous for our country that kind of response was needed. We did topple the Taliban government. We succeeded in at least fracturing al-Qaeda. But now, 8 years later, you have to wonder, what is the strategy here? What is the end game? What are we trying to accomplish? And as I increasingly hear commanders talk about defeating the Taliban, that's a whole new strategy. We are not going to win that one.
Well, you know, you ask, what is the end game here? The end game in civic terms, in sort of nation-building terms in Afghanistan, increasingly sounds like this.
You're talking about hundreds of polling stations which were never opened, and votes have been reported from those, and those numbers are included, which has taken Mr. Karzai about 50%.
That's leading presidential opposition candidate Abdullah Abdullah talking about corruption in the election. It looks like Karzai will be restored to power. There will be a runoff. What do you make of the democratic nation building 8 years after 9/11 in Afghanistan?
Well, I think some aspects of the nation building have been quite successful, but this election is not a success. And this rush to claim success that we talked about the last time I was on, was exactly that. It was a rush without the real deal of the success. This
now,
was widespread
that,
fraud.
Is,
and
that based,
have to
is that based on your reporting in Afghanistan, do you think? Or is that a kind of an impression you have as a journalist who's maybe likely to be skeptical?
Well, we have a tremendous reporter on the ground in Kabul, in Jean McKenzie, who very uniquely travels all around the country. Unlike most journalists who are there, you know, it's very difficult to travel. When I was there, I didn't get much out of Kabul. She is constantly seeing this whole country and works with a network of freelancers who are all over the country. And what they were saying right from the beginning was women did not show up for the vote in the southeast. There was tremendous campaign of fear that was successful by the Taliban, which kept voter turnout down. Fraud is rampant. I mean, this is really not an election that's going to be accepted by the Afghan people as legitimate. Hmm. And one of the things the U.S. government and its international allies can do right now is focus on process. The troop buildup, I think, is increasingly being seen as a mistake. But I think that one thing that can be done is to really go after this election and try to enhance its legitimacy by rooting out this fraud, and then recognizing there are local structures that can really be brought to bear here. The Loya Jirga, using the institutions of Afghanistan,
the
itself,
tribal sort of parliamentary,
like a grand
procedure.
Council of tribes that can come
town
together.
Afghanistan town meeting.
It's a place where Afghanistan has always gone in crisis throughout its history, and I'm wondering if that isn't something that will come into play here. But the Obama administration is going to have to think in a more sophisticated way than just increasing troops.
Right. Well, Charlie Sennett, executive editor and founder of Global Post, where you can see some of this reporting on Afghanistan, new online international news service. Charlie, it's certainly the case. I mean, the takeaway is the legacy. Whatever memorials are put up in the United States, the legacy of 9/11 will certainly be seen for many years to come in Afghanistan. Thanks, Charlie.
Thanks, John.